Welcome to the third edition of our podcast, Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michael Hanley.
And I'm Michelle Mishler. It's November 24th, and in today's program, we explore the two extremes of the moral spectrum. We look at corruption and social entrepreneurs. We also introduce you to Denise Burnett. She's a senior director of events at the Forum and was just awarded the Legion d'Honneur. And she shares with us some of her favorite moments in her three-decade career here at the Forum.
Well, everybody's back from India, and we are now entering the two critical months before the big party at the end of January in Davos.
Home stretch.
The home stretch. This place goes into absolute lockdown. We have 400 people at the World Economic Forum dedicated to making the last week in January the most productive week of the year for the 2,500 participants that we have attending our annual meeting.
Basically, after Christmas, we say goodbye to our families.
We have no holidays allowed across the forum in January. Everything is focused towards making the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum an extraordinary experience.
And I'm sure it will be again.
Indeed. We have the World Economic Forum's Partnering Against Corruption Initiative. It's a global anti-corruption initiative developed by companies for companies. The initiative aims to design and implement policies and systems to help tackle the problem of corruption. Michelle, you spoke to Alex Wong this week, senior director and the leader of the initiative.
That's right. And corruption, he said, is costly, but Alex also says there seems to be will to change.
Well, it's been estimated that over $1 trillion US is paid in bribes every year. And there is a significant drag also on GDP growth. And, of course, that's overweighted to developing countries. And we know that the big issues today, which are related to economic growth, stability, unemployment, every time you open the papers, it all comes down to challenges and concerns and frustration around corruption, the unfairness. It's pretty clear that this issue is what is causing a lot of the issues related to equality and fairness that many countries are trying to deal with right now.
Now, how do you deal with entrenched interests? I mean, you look at companies, and it obviously, to a large degree, is in their interest to bribe because they won't get business done any other way. How do you deal with that?
Well, you hit on one of the mantras of the PACI initiative, but also the World Economic Forum. It's trying to create the level playing field. We know that there are many companies that really do want to fight corruption. In fact, with some of the legislation, both in the US, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and the UK, the UK Serious Fraud Office, UK Bribery Act, companies have to actually, from a legal perspective, of course, fight corruption. So the good news is that it's in the interests of most global companies to fight corruption, because it's not only legally wrong, it's also morally wrong. So how do we change behavior in other companies who maybe don't feel that same pressure, or companies that operate in regions where some of these laws don't apply? This is where the power of us just raising this issue, using our platform, bringing leaders together to share what they're trying to do, and in a way, a bit of peer pressure, is one of the main strategies we use. A good example of that is in our special meeting on economic growth in the Middle East that we just concluded in Jordan a couple of weeks ago. We launched a new initiative, which is a Middle East CEO-led initiative around transparency and anti-corruption. And by partnering with them and lending the voices of global CEOs to what they're trying to do on the regional level, we're giving that visibility and giving that space for leaders to talk about what's happening, start engaging with each other, how to improve, start engaging with government on how they can start changing the system.
So what is in it for our stakeholders?
Ultimately, for many companies have come out and said that by fighting corruption, they actually win business. We've had many of our CEOs make it very clear this is not a corporate social responsibility issue. This is a core business issue. Companies are now winning contracts because they are proving to their clients that they are a corrupt-free company. Companies who fight corruption also allow the companies in their supply chain and their value chain to also then step up to the same fight. that ensures quality of goods is much higher than it might be. It ensures that people who are working for the companies are working based on merit, not based on some bribe, and so therefore the overall quality of their value chain is increased. And so I think if you talk to CEOs who are running global companies, this is clearly a business, smart business decision. It's not something just because they feel they have to because of the law or because it's morally right. It's actually sound business judgment.
That was Alex Wong, sounding hopeful that through a bit of peer pressure, corruption could see an end.
Now, let's take a look at the other side of the moral spectrum, social entrepreneurs. Now, the Schwab Foundation locates and then awards the title of social entrepreneurs to business people around the world who are trying to effect change and make the world a better place. Miriam Schoening is the senior director of the Schwab Foundation, and I began by asking her what exactly a social entrepreneur is.
Social entrepreneurs are uncommon heroes of our times. They find innovative solutions to social or ecological problems. They are across the world. They are not advocates, but practical in the sense that they implement the solutions that that they have come across. So maybe one of the most well-known examples is Nobel Peace Prize winner Muhammad Yunus, who was behind the concept of microfinance, the idea that you can give very small loans to women in starting in poor Bangladesh, and that they would actually repay. So that's another important characteristic of social entrepreneurs, that they are not fully dependent on grants, but find a way to create a self-sustainable organization that is able to generate most of its revenues or sometimes even be profitable.
And what is the criteria?
Some innovative service, product, model that really tackles a problem at the root cause. So that's number one, innovation. Two is we're looking at a direct impact. So organizations that are working immediately with the beneficiaries on the ground, not necessarily intermediary organizations who are one step removed from working on the ground. It has to be, of course, a positive impact. That should be without, you know, saying. The third criteria is sustainability, which I alluded to before, the fact that an organization is able to generate part of its revenue and is not fully grant dependent. But we also recognize that for most social entrepreneurs, it's some kind of financing mix that is currently occurring. Sustainability also means organizational sustainability. So an organization should exist for already more than 3 years and have proven that it can weather some storms. The fourth one is reach and scope, meaning an organization should have gone beyond its pilot project. It should have already replicated in other settings. Ideally, it's already active in an entire country. In some cases, we particularly like those that are even internationally active already. And the fifth criteria is about future replicability. So the fact that the organization still has a potential, not necessarily just the organization, but also the method that was pioneered by the organization, can be also applied to many other settings around the world, which is then what we, through our network, hope to help achieve as well. One organization from Pakistan, for example, has pioneered a way to bring micro health insurance to poor people in Pakistan. We, of course, know microfinance, but I think the health insurance part in particular has been much more challenging, because think about coming up with a full medical service and only paying $2 or $3 per month for that, because that's the maximum people below the poverty line or at the poverty line can afford. So that's very challenging, of course, and still not compromising on medical quality. But Asha Hassan, this social entrepreneur, has managed to find a way, and also a new way to distribute the health insurance, because the problem is that most poor people are reluctant to pay for something that they might not need. So in a sense, for them, wasting $2 a month without being able to actually access anything or get anything returned is a difficult sell. So he works with the large companies across Pakistan, some international, some of the national companies, and through their employees and the employees of the employees, which are the household workers, the chauffeurs, etc., they can provide that health insurance to those employees, to those that are typically just at the margin of falling below the poverty line, particularly if some health accident incurs, of course. So that's one example. Another example, maybe from the Philippines, which is called Happinoy, the organization, and they work with the thousands and thousands of very small store owners in the Philippines. So many of them are often women that just sell a few chewing gums or toothbrushes, etc., but often are not literate enough to understand whether they're actually making a profit or not, how they should be pricing their products, about inventory, etc. So Happinoy provides that coaching and that education so that they know how to basically run their small businesses. It also provides a joint sourcing of the products so that they can actually access the products at cheaper prices because they can buy in bulk together with all the other women. And then it provides some branding and guidelines on how to better improve the store look, and also looks at sourcing useful products for what's called the base of the pyramid, so products that are, for example, solar lights that can replace kerosene, which is typically used and which poses several hazards to households because kerosene, of course, is highly explosive and LED lights aren't.
So how do you find them? I mean, this is a big world and a lot of people don't necessarily advertise what they're doing. How do you go about finding these people?
That is a very active task. We always look forward to any recommendations from around the world. We have an open application process, so you can just go to our website, schwabfound.org, and submit any person that you think would qualify for a social entrepreneur for the Schwab Foundation. We, of course, also rely on a large network of people that can point us in the right direction, where we typically then send out emails and request for suggestions for our annual search and selection process.
That was Miriam Schoening, Senior Director of the Schwab Foundation. Now let's turn to Denise Bernay. She's a Senior Director and Head of Events here at the World Economic Forum. She's been here since 1978 and is something of a forum institution herself. Denise was awarded the Legion d'Honneur this past Friday by the French Ambassador to Switzerland, Alain Cattard, and we caught up with her to talk about that honour and reminisce about some of her favourite moments with the Forum over the last 30 years.
I was looking for a part-time job. I just been hired to be a secretary, and we started to build the database of the Forum, you know, to start to read all the annual reports, the name of the CEO, position, number of employees, turnover, and a summary of the company. This was the start, and we were six persons all together with Professor Schwab, and it was 6 months after we started with the roundtables in Europe. So as I was French, I was part of, first of all, the roundtable in Paris, and also in Amsterdam, in Rome, and so. And I was not really part of the organization, but I started to organize, and also, of course, to meet people. We were really like a family, with, of course, the supervision of Professor Schwab, with his vision, and also we collaborate very closely with him. I learned really how to work and to build relations, because this is something, it's difficult to learn, to be at the right place, at the right moment, with different persons.
And I guess how to deal with them,
yes,
and how to engage.
Yeah, exactly. To we have always to stay at our place. This is not because now the Forum is well known, you can say, oh, I'm working with the Forum. And no. We have to stay always behind and just, you know. And I think this is something I learned. Humility, in fact, was... And this was, I think, appreciated.
And how did you feel when you got that call that you were going to be presented with the Légion d'honneur?
I said, "Oh, ça c'est pas vrai. Non, non, this is not true." I said, "No, no, no, you are joking. This is not for me. I'm not enough known, and you know." They said, "Yes, yes." So I was impressed by what the ambassador said. And
what would you tell new people here? What would your advice be to people here?
First of all, you are not here for yourself. This is something, you know, Professor Schwab created this organization. He was the founder. I started 7 years after. And he did it for the world, for the with a mission. And it is important that we are not working for us and for the forum. This is something, it's important. We have a certain culture that I'm not sure that, of course, the new generation, they are different. And they are very ambitious. And here we have to be patient. And to just follow the objectives that we have and this is really gratifiant, I can say in French.
And that's it for our third installment of Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Michler.
And I'm Michael Hanley. Next week, we get insight into innovative solutions to tackling healthcare globally. We'll be discussing the Eurozone crisis and another what-if scenario. This time we hear from Nada Moussavazadeh, Chief Executive Officer of Oxford Analytica. He warns us about China turning inward.